so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
Toy Department time. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. Day before.
Hey.
How are you? Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
You didn't. I was just hollering in the background.
Oh, hey. It's the day before Valentine's Day. Are you all set up for love festivities this week?
I got everything taken care of. Here's the question I'm asking myself now. When my girlfriend gets home from work in Madison, Wisconsin today, which is going to happen sometime in the next 2 hours.
Saying girlfriend now, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely saying girlfriend.
All right. So you know what you're doing for Valentine's Day.
Well, nothing, because she's in Madison, Wisconsin.
Right.
Here's the point. When she gets home today and finds flowers and an elaborate Valentine's delivery, will she be happy to receive flowers and accept it as, in fact, a Valentine's gift? Or will she wonder why, it came on the 13th and potentially realize that it's because her boyfriend wasn't going to spend an extra $10 just to have it delivered on Valentine's Day? Which is absurd if you consider the amount of money spent.
But absurd that you wouldn't spend the extra money? Is that what you're saying?
I certainly wouldn't. And it's she's going to hear this, so she'll eventually find out what right. I did. But it's a principle issue. It's not about the $10. Obviously, the whole business costs significantly more than $10. $10 is little to nothing in the grand scheme of this Valentine's Day. It's the fact that it wasn't that I was late and needed rush delivery for Valentine's Day. It was like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, they said, we're going to scam people and just throw an extra $10 fee on to have day of delivery.
That is a little, because it's not like they're like shipping the flowers from Vermont or wherever, right? Like they're going to use some local florist to do this, and they could do that any day they want, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's blatantly, and I understand that's a busy day, but if it's a busy day, hire extra delivery driver for the day. It's not, like, don't charge me $10. It's already worth it. It's a busy day because more people are buying your damn flowers. Don't gouge me extra.
I don't know, man. I feel like it's like the cheeseburger that I love in my apartment costs $2 more during Super Bowl week. You know what I mean? It doesn't cost them any more to make it during Super Bowl week. They're just going
for
the money.
That would offend me as well. I would not eat that burger during Super Bowl week.
That's a fair point, but I didn't realize until I'd already paid for it, so it was kind of...
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Yeah, I wasn't going to ask for my $2 back. It is sneaky.
See, like that...
And I live in the building. I'm getting that burger all the time. I'm in there, they know me, and they still gouge me, and it bummed me out, but that's another.
Yeah, that's a bummer, man. At the very least, it's like you're disappointed in a group of people you thought were like your friendly acquaintances, and it turns out they're just in it for the cash.
Hello, business. I thought you were here for me. Thought you cared about me, business. What's up?
Apparently, your goal is making money. Whatever.
I am in this position, and I've been in this position, I feel like, for like 37 consecutive Valentine's days. Where I may be exaggerating a little, because that would have been I would have been very young when this started, but like I have a Valentine. We're like we got a few dates into the mix.
Is she gonna listen to the podcast? Does she know about the podcast?
I don't think so. No, I wonder.
Okay, well, first of all, why aren't you promoting the podcast better?
that's an excellent point. I don't know,
but go on.
But, it's that weird spot where, like, you want to get them something nice, but you don't know that you are going to be able to think of the perfect thing for them yet. You know, like, just feels like there's a lot of ways you can mess up. You don't want to go too extravagant and freak them out. You know what I mean?
Or if you like them, you don't want to go not extravagant enough and, like, understate what those first five dates have meant.
Yeah.
It's the worst possible spot to be in.
It's really terrible.
Like, it's that three to five, maybe 3 to 7 dates, depending on how quickly you, like, really get into somebody.
Yeah.
That's the worst possible zone. Because if it's early enough, there's not too much to worry about. Here's some flowers. Have a nice day. If it's later, you know each other really well. You know what you have to do. There's no clever trickiness to figure anything out. You just have to do it.
Yeah.
But in that middle zone, man, like, there's so many things that can be interpreted. No one knows exactly how much to read into anything. I mean, the whole dating part's hard enough without throwing Valentine's Day right into that confusing area of it.
Yeah, it's like the line on your love life is 4.5 points. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's in the Vegas zone.
You just stuck there. So I feel like I've navigated this, but it took not a small amount of advice to get there. So I'll let you know next week how it goes. All right, Tom.
Yeah, we'll need an update on how it went.
This is the You Show, man. Like, right, we're doing all your stuff. So,
yeah, I don't want to overstate it because it's not like I had you watch and listen to my favorite stuff. But it is the episode where I got to make you listen to stuff that you might not otherwise have agreed to undertake.
Just out of curiosity, how much of this was designed to torture, annoy, or enrage me in some way?
I wouldn't actually say any of it. Well, maybe napalm was a little. Well, see, I don't know, man. Sometimes I'm confused about you, okay? So, at least to some degree, I sincerely gave you things that I really like that are outside your typical lane that you, I thought, might potentially actually enjoy. I was aware, however, that it could very easily cross the line into annoy and infuriate.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that I hated everything and I thought you were trying to troll me. I was just curious. There definitely was one thing where when you first told me, I definitely thought you were trying to troll me.
I assume that was the band Kruangbin, and that's more about their name, so I'm don't give it away. I'm very interested to see what you thought about that, actually. I'll try to defend or at least explain my thinking on these things as we get to them. But there's actually a couple things I want to just dip into that we had already agreed to watch or been involved in watching that weren't exactly a part of this. First of those being The Chi, which we're now 4 or 5 episodes into.
It's got to be 5, I feel like.
That sounds right. I really should have looked it up beforehand. But anyway, this show, so I think when we started, we weren't quite sure what it was. I might have thought after the first episode there would be a little more of a, for lack of a better word, like a technical aspect that, like, we would be seeing the neighborhood and also getting a view of, like, the police and social programs and stuff like that. I think over the course of the first, it is 5 episodes, it's been much more a show about people in a neighborhood in Chicago. And it, to my mind, has been just an incredible version of that. The characters are compelling. The story is, I mean, I think all too real, first of all. And second of all, fascinating on a human level and on a sort of social science level. And this last episode in particular was built around this block party scene, which was probably the last 20 minutes of the episode or so. And it was so, I mean, I don't want to just sell this to Chicagoans, but it did such an incredible job of capturing the summer thing. Like, block parties, and this one had a particular purpose and theme, but generally speaking, the Chicago summer block party all throughout the Chicagoland area, where single or, you know, two blocks at a time, just like that, block the street off, and the local restaurant comes out and you get a bouncy castle and a DJ, and like, it's just this indelible Chicago thing that was so brightly and beautifully rendered. And I know this is serving me specifically because it's my history, not just a place and a time on a TV show, but I'm curious to see if you would agree that, if nothing else, and I think there's plenty else, but if nothing else, this show is doing an incredible job of painting a vivid picture of a neighborhood and the way it exists as sort of an organism.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I feel like this show is, you need to mention it's episode 5. It's sort of at a place where, you know, it's a definitive middle of this story. Yes.
And it's really not giving much away in terms of direction where it's headed.
Yeah, like the word I used is a loaded word, sort of, and that word was unremarkable, and I don't mean that in the negative sense that it sounds.
Right.
I mean, like, we're just sort of in this story right now, I feel like, where we're really spending time with people in this neighborhood, and it's a fun place to spend time. So I don't mean it like it's not good television or it's not interesting, but it's also sort of a little bit hard to kind of describe where we are. I just feel like we're sort of setting up for where this story is going to head, and sometimes that's a necessary part of story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I do, you know, I enjoyed spending time in this world. I didn't think that the, you know, today was a good day, was a particularly great episode, and I think that's partially because some of those things, in terms of the specificity of, you know, this block party or or the neighborhood, are a little bit lost on me. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah. So that may just, but part of it may be a Chicago thing. It's hard to separate.
Interesting to me that you don't watch Shameless.
I just can't get into the whole business of it.
Which I think Chicago is less of a character in Shameless for sure. I'm not even sure that they shoot in Chicago.
I don't watch Chicago Fire or Chicago Med or Chicago Justice either.
Right. I understand, but I would say that
Shameless
is not those things. Right? Shameless,
yeah. No,
it is a fairly beloved.
I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just nothing more than my dad loving it that I can't quite. I don't know.
Yeah, it is.
It's probably my fault, but I
weirdly loved by dads. Like my dad loves Shameless, and I know other dads who also love Shameless. Yeah, so I'm not really sure what that's about.
Maybe it has to do with like you like to watch sometimes the worst expressions of like what you could have been, and be like, I'm doing a great job.
Yeah, you know? I think all dads enjoy the William H. Macy character for sure.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. I went to the Wikipedia page for The Chi, and they have the U.S. viewers there.
Yeah.
It's interesting because there are not a ton of people watching the show, less than 1 million per episode, apparently.
Okay.
But that number is growing per episode, which seems like probably a good thing. So maybe people
show
a little bit.
We haven't necessarily directly addressed this because I think it's pretty obvious, but the second thing that I would throw in the sort of if nothing else pile is it's, you know, one of the blackest shows on television and in fact in television history. And that in and of itself is an accomplishment.
Yeah. I suppose that's true, but I think we've seen sometimes that can be helpful gaining an audience. So we'll
that's
see.
What I'm saying. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that may be part of the audience gain is like, you know, there's an entire community that's realizing, hey, one of five shows in the history of shows that have ever been really for us.
All right, that's a little bit of an exaggeration.
A little bit, but yeah. What? Maybe it's really 10 or 15? I mean, it really is a very small number.
It's a too small number. I'll certainly grant you that.
Yeah.
All right, what else do you got for us? Because we got a lot of things that you made me watch.
The Darkest Hour. I didn't want to throw that in the things I made you watch. Like, you were going to watch that, right?
No, that's correct. That's correct.
Okay, so what'd you think?
I enjoyed The Darkest Hour quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's very interesting to me, obviously, that there's this sort of intersection between this movie and Dunkirk.
Yes.
And I think Dunkirk has certainly had more buzz, and I understand why that is. It's a very showy movie. But this, to me, is the far superior of those two movies.
Far superior. I understand why it is. I am saddened and disappointed because this is a movie that is less splashy and spectacular, but equally well shot and containing infinitely better performances, character development, script writing, storytelling, all of the things that make a movie really, really good.
Yeah.
Is it a great movie? I probably stopped just short of that because it is reasonably dry. But I loved this movie the same way I love a good documentary or a good work of nonfiction. You know, it is telling us about a real person and you know, painting a picture of what he really was like at this critical historical moment that sort of defined him and his career and his life. And it's acted, written, and shot beautifully. Like, if it's not great, it is as good as it could have been.
Yeah, and look, and I understand why you would want to make a movie. I mean, you know, just to give you a sense of this, right? The intersection here is that Churchill is kind of plotting the mission in Dunkirk. It almost seems like, at least the way the movie portrays it, is like it's kind of his Hail Mary for how they're going to stay in this war, because they're getting their ass kicked at this point. And doesn't look like they're going to get a ton of help from America or anywhere else. And the rest of Europe is folding, and everyone wants them to fold. What are they going to do? And I understand why you would make this, you know, shoot Dunkirk the way that you did, you know, in this sort of story on the ground where people don't really understand the 30,000-foot machinations. They're just trying to stay alive against difficult odds. Like, I understand why you'd sort of make that movie the way that you did versus this movie. But to me, it's a much greater achievement to take sort of mundane political machinations and make them tension filled in a situation where literally anyone who walks in there has a sense of the outcome of World War II already. You know what I mean? Like, like this movie is genuinely tense. And I think that's an achievement in itself. I do think, and look, I'm not saying that he wasn't good. He was clearly very good.
The makeup.
You're gonna credit
the makeup.
Yeah, so makeup's doing a lot of work, man. Makeup is doing a lot of work in this performance.
Yeah, I you know, who's been better this year, I guess, is the question.
Well, I would say Danny Day-Lewis, right off the top.
I mean, I think he's probably the one name, and I probably agree with you that he's so spectacular. There's a little bit of the Michael Jordan thing with him where it's like, okay, fine, but how many times do we actually have to hand this thing to him? But I mean, as good as Daniel Kaluuya and Timothy Chalamet and Denzel Washington were, and I think I enjoyed at least Get Out and Roman J. Israel as much as most.
Did you get a screener for Roman J. Israel?
I did.
All right, we may have to talk off the air about that because I haven't seen that yet, and I'm not alone because I think like 12 people saw it, but.
Not very many people saw it. Anyway,
I do think that Chalamet and Kaluuya were Oldman's equals, at least. You know what I mean?
Maybe, but I guess I am loath to discredit him in any way just because he put on a fat suit to look like Winston Churchill. Because, frankly, acting like Winston Churchill is still a pretty big job, and I think he did it incredibly.
I'm not here to damn him, for sure. I'm just
from
saying
the voice to the
makeup and the fat suit's doing some work.
It is, I think of the two scenes where he speaks, one in Parliament and one in sort of like a Parliament back room to his party, and really revs him up. And like, those are two long monologues that he slays and is utterly convincing. And sure, the fat suit helps with the convincing part, but it doesn't detract from his performance, which I really do think is phenomenal.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, look, he seems to be, you know, I'm reading articles that it's like, who's the likeliest to beat Gary Oldman? So he's going to be a pretty heavy favorite to win. And I'm not here to condemn him or say that he was bad. It was clearly very good.
I think Daniel Day-Lewis is the only one who has a much of a chance of unseating him, would be my guess.
I much preferred I definitely preferred the Danny Day-Lewis performance. And I would say that I walked away from this more impressed with the movie than I expected to be.
Me too.
And maybe it's just the hype coming in, maybe a little bit less impressed with Oldman than I expected to be. That makes sense.
Okay.
But again, a lot of that's about expectation and just, you know, it's hard to set the bar much higher than this.
Coming in, certainly heard more about Oldman than the movie, you know?
Right.
Which is interesting. So, okay, let's move on to the stuff I really did force you into. And I want to start with the thing we didn't mention last week, but that I so enjoyed coming in, experiencing it myself during the week, that I decided to add it to the plate, because originally we had said Black Panther, but that comes out next week, so we bumped it. I figured, why not throw you back to the theater anyway and make you see Jumanji, which... Was this one where you felt like I was deliberately trolling you?
Yeah. 100% you thought you were trolling me here.
But after you saw it, did you change your mind?
Yeah, I did. I did.
It was good, right?
I liked the movie. Yeah.
It's a good movie.
Look, there's a lot of things. Like, just first of all, the idea that they're remaking Jumanji is a little bit like grown. You know, and you just and it starts in
just
this
to be
way.
Clear, just to be clear, you're groaning because you're precious about the original Jumanji, right? Just because you're like, why do we have to do it again?
Yeah, it's more like, oh, Hollywood, you know, you have
right.
no
There's
ideas.
There's nothing sacred, because that was the most baffling thing in the world to me, was people saying, how dare they? When I'm like, I mean, I know Robin Williams has passed and we loved him and he's in that, but like, that nobody cared all that much.
No, I saw the first one. I barely remember it. It wasn't like I was like, oh, you're ruining my childhood. It was just a little bit more like, this sounds like a terrible idea. Yeah, you know what I mean? Totally. We're remaking a movie from 20 years ago that wasn't that
good.
That's
basically how I felt. But I did have several people tell me, no, it's actually good, and that's why I ended up going to see it.
So, you know, and then it starts, and, you know, they're kind of rolling out these the Breakfast Club archetypes, essentially, right? You've got the nerd and the jock and the pretty girl, you know, the pretty popular girl, and the Ally Sheedy, who, I had to look up if she was related to Ally Sheedy. She seems so much like Ally Sheedy in the Breakfast Club.
She was very Ally Sheedy-y.
And those people are drawn so broadly, that I was stewing, I think, for the first 20 minutes of this movie. I was convinced you were trolling me. Totally. I was like, I can't believe this is so bad. But once you get into the video game that they're essentially trapped in, you realize that the conceit of redoing this as a video game is super effective, because there's this whole level of sort of people as their avatars, where the people in the game are kind of having to be this broadly drawn thing that they are in real life.
Exactly.
And it allows for there's a ton of fun that they get from that. There are some like genuinely funny scenes.
Jack Black is so funny throughout this movie. And it's such just a good acting performance by him playing the hot girl in Jack Black's body. And The Rock, I mean, he's just winning. And Kevin Hart hits like his big comedic moments. It's Jumanji, you know, but they, like you said, they do a great job of setting up this like dripping with trope nonsense beginning, where you're like, really? And then they kind of flip it all on its head and make these clever jokes and subtle observances about it that you don't see coming. And it really was quite enjoyable.
Yeah. And look, they The Rock is really good at just being a movie star.
He's a star, man. He's just winning. That's what he is. He's a winning presence on screen.
So much charisma. And obviously, you know, there's a formula with him and Kevin Hart that kind of that really works, you know. And so you get some of that dynamic in this movie. Are you curious? Like, I feel like I would like to – you could sort of tell that The Rock can act, even though he doesn't really flex those muscles too often. I would like to see him take on something more challenging more often, is all I'm saying.
The performance I think of is one of his first, which was in the movie Be Cool. You see that?
Yes, I did. He was good in that, I thought.
He's very good in it. It's not, you know, like it's not like he's playing transparent or something, but he's a gay character and a very like a silly character in a not so movie starish way, and he really pulls it off. You know, he really that really is the one example I can think of where he's being asked to do much more than be The Rock.
Yep.
And I tend to agree. I think he's capable of much more. I'd love to see a serious role. I just think it's hard to write one for a guy who looks like that.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. It would have to sort of be based around, you know, it's almost like he, I don't want to say the wrestler, because obviously that's maybe not using enough imagination, but it would have to be something of that vibe. You know what I mean?
You could not pull off a serious film with The Rock without acknowledging his physicality as part of his character.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that has to be a thing, I think. But it's, you know, this guy's been the most bankable guy in Hollywood for a little while now. He certainly has more money than God. It's like, right. If he wants it, it's like, if he's thinking about his legacy, because even a guy like Stallone, you know, it's like, I guess it's it. Do you want to be Stallone or do you want to be Schwarzenegger? You know what I mean?
I think he's already so much better than Schwarzenegger, but categorically I'm with you.
You know, yeah, well, I mean, look, I think there's a real comparison. I think he's certainly a more talented actor than Schwarzenegger. I mean, that's not saying a ton, but right now he's kind of making the Schwarzenegger career path, right? Where it's all exclusively blockbuster, you know, popcorn-y fare. So
a little bit.
But he's really good at it. You know, so
he's great.
So no shots.
He's great. And this is just such a it's a surprising movie to walk out of being like, you know what? That was good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I did. It did feel a little bit weird. And I should also say too, like if you like, you know, big action special effects.
Oh yeah. Some great stuff.
Yeah. It really, you know, it looks great. You can tell they spent a lot of money on it and it works.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. So yeah.
Jumanji for the win.
Jumanji. All right. Well, thanks for not trolling
me. Let's go to the other visual I burdened you with this week, which is the Netflix sci-fi series, Altered Carbon. Basic premise, for those who don't know, is the world has evolved to a crazy future technology situation where human beings' minds and sort of personalities can be downloaded to a little disc, and so people are switching bodies all over the place, and rich people can live forever and get even richer and richer, and the money and power is consolidated more and more to people who have lived for hundreds of years, and stuff's all messed up, and some old warrior man gets awakened in a new body and has to solve a mystery is the long and short of it.
Yeah. So how many of these episodes did you watch? Have you seen the whole thing?
I think I'm through four.
Oh, you're through four. I think I'm through three and a half or so, but I'm not sure it really matters. And I'm going to apologize because I feel like I've said this a lot about a lot of things, but I think it has literally applied to all of them. This show looks great. The look of it is fantastic. Like it's a really vividly drawn world. I don't know what kind of budget Netflix has, but it looks like they spent some considerable capital on it. Like the special effects look great. I love the color and like the tone of it. Like it's a great series to look at. Joel Kinnaman. I don't know who trained Joel Kinnaman, but good Lord, like dude's bringing it.
That was the hook I used to convince my girlfriend to watch this with me. It was basically like, look at those abs. Who cares if it's good?
he's super duper swole. That's for sure.
Man alive, he's something else. And there are some delightful characters, I would say.
Yeah, I think I'm done saying nice things about it. Because, man, like, I don't know who they got to write the script for this. And I'm not going to say that some of the dialogue is at the level of porn parody. But it's not too much further off of that in terms of hackiness. It's definitely like sub-CBS procedural level dialogue for a lot of this. And I'm not just talking about like the techno babble, of which there is a serious amount. But it's a little bit more about like anytime these characters make like cutting observations about each other or about the society or whatever. Oh, my God. It's so cheesy.
I would say it not all, but a handful, maybe half of the characters on this show have the like vocabularian sophistication of Purred Happily from Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
Like that is my biggest problem with it. Is I'm finding the mystery rather interesting. That may be my problem.
You know what's weird is like the robot hotel guy is not one of those characters. Like
that's
he
what
actually
I was gonna
has
say.
A real vocabulary.
The one really great character, I think, is the hotel. There's like a hotel AI guy, and I really enjoy him. I think that's a really clever idea that they are that whoever wrote this, that either that actor is taking serious liberties or someone spent much more time on his lines and behaviors than on a lot of the rest of it. But I'm going to finish it because I want to know what the hell's going on.
So that's
addition to painting a vivid world, I do think they've done a good job of creating this mystery where I am very confused and also quite interested.
All right. So I'm half of that. I'm definitely very confused and not at all interested.
All right.
Like there is zero chance that I'm going to finish this season. But like it is. Yeah. Because look, people are switching bodies. There are a gajillion time jumps. I can barely tell who's in love with who. I can sort of tell who wants to have sex with who. Like
there have been some honestly, even in that department, there have been some real curveballs.
Yeah. The motivations of the characters are very weird. I am told that later on in this season that there is someone that I would really like to watch you know, just glide across the screen. There's a Joel Kinnaman for me, if you will. But I'm not going to stick around for that. Yeah, it's just not. I got better things to do.
Fair enough.
So yeah, I'm definitely a thumbs down on Altered Carbon. Although I did recommend it to people I know who are like into sci-fi.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, well, all those things you said at the beginning are definitely true and very much so. Like, I would say that visually it's pretty unimpeachable. I mean,
yeah, agreed.
So if you liked Dunkirk, hop on board, because like if you're not worried about story or character, then you're gonna love this thing.
Yeah.
If you are, you might have some issues, but again, I do think that the mystery is interesting.
I feel like this is a show that if you thought about too hard would crumble, but I'm not even capable of thinking hard about it. You know what I mean? I can't wrap my head around it enough to understand.
No, I don't even know that we have the data about it critically. Like, I think I'm missing information I would need in order to think for more than like a minute about what's going on. I would very quickly arrive at a point of thought that was like, well, that's all confusing. What's next?
And I feel like this show wants to say some things about contemporary society, but is like completely incapable of it.
Maybe. I don't know how much it's really trying to say other than like broad, like, look out, technology could be a problem. Speaking of which, did you see our impending doom?
Oh, sorry, go ahead. I did have a point, though. Go ahead.
Was it about Altered Carbon?
Yeah.
Then make it, because mine is taking us in a different direction.
I mean, don't you think, like, this show is set ostensibly in San Francisco, where you live, or at least generally where you live, where you work, at least. And like, isn't this sort of the idea of sort of gentrification, you know what I mean? Or the sort of like techie monetary sort of takeover of San Francisco taken like to an nth future sort of extreme, right? You know, where you have like the rich living in the clouds and the, you know, they don't even look at the poor people down there and they live forever and they force people to fight in, you know, in bodies to, you know.
Maybe we're saying the same thing, but that all feels very ex post facto to me. I mean, I think that's just, if you play out the idea of millionaires living forever, that's pretty logical.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean, but I think it's trying to say some things about class.
Yeah, but like I said, I think that's pretty like broad, general, yay for people, technology's dangerous, watch out for the future stuff. I don't think they're trying to make any particularly subtle or pointed statements.
All right, fair enough, because they're not. Whether they're trying to or they're not trying to, they're not.
No, it feels like a pretty basic like sci-fi action thriller. You know, there's a lot of action and thriller. There's much less attention to theme than action and thrill.
I would agree with that.
All right. Did you see our coming doom in robot form?
Our coming doom in robot form. No, what is this?
Oh, no big deal. Just somebody invented the exact robot from that Black Mirror episode where it kills the human race.
I've heard a little bit about this, like robot dogs or whatever is like a thing now.
It's an AI robot that looks almost exactly like that psychopathic dog that can open doors on its own. It's terrifying.
Yeah, man. Black Mirror, like, ridiculously good at predicting like real things, right? Like,
frightening, man.
It's getting a little scary. It's getting like an oddly specific real things.
It's uncanny how much the real robot dog moves like the psychopathic robot dog in Black Mirror.
Yeah. Like people talk about The Simpsons and their sort of predictive ability and they've definitely gotten some things, but like I feel like some of that is a function of their like literally 500 episodes of The Simpsons, right? And, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, like
they're bound to bump into something eventually.
Yeah, exactly. It's the sort of the monkeys on a typewriter kind of thing.
Black Mirror, there's like 18 of them and 13 of them are already like creeping into reality. It's terrifying.
Yeah, it's terrifying. It's terrifying.
Anyway, back to things I forced you to watch, or now we're on to things I forced you to listen to, I suppose. Here's where I came at it from these musical things. We know where you stand on Fish, so I wasn't going to put us both through that. I feel like the three broad genres that I am more into than you are sort of lady singer-songwriter R&B, something like psychedelic guitar music, and sort of lesser known garage rocky type stuff.
Yeah.
And so I kind of tried to pick some recent, I think, good versions of each of those three genres, realizing that basically you don't like these things, but trying to choose things that I thought were good enough and interesting enough that they might appeal to you in some way.
Yeah. All right. So I definitely thought a lot and I was trying to think thematically about like, well, why did you pick these things?
Yeah.
And that does make some more sense. I want to propose something to you, and this probably should have been a show meeting thing, but I thought, well, it'd be fun to do this on the air.
Classic toy department.
I want to propose to you that, right, we're doing this podcast and we would like people to listen. And I think both of us have our own music taste. They're esoteric in their own ways. I almost feel like in 2018, I wonder, like, what good are we doing ourselves? And this is different, obviously, because this is about you get to pick what you want to pick, and I'm not denigrating your picks in any way. But, I mean, I almost feel like
clearly you're denigrating my picks, but go on.
Well, I mean, I'll denigrate the picks in the time we've allotted to do
okay,
so.
Okay, cool.
I'm not doing that here. But I feel like for the future, like, if we're going to talk about a record, it should be a record that has some sort of place in the cultural conversation, like it's coming out this week and people are talking about it. Or
I propose that next week we discuss the Black Panther soundtrack.
Yeah, and that's fine. I'm into that. I think like discussing Justin Timberlake makes sense for this podcast. you know, like that record or whatever. And I don't mean it has to be pop. I just mean it has to be like I, cause
it has to be in the culture.
Yeah. Like the Kodo, tell me how to say that right.
Kruangbin. Kruangbin. Reasonably yeah. well known.
Like, I just don't know who is ever going to hear that record. And I don't know, like, you know what I mean? Like, obviously, look, you can listen to this podcast and do it. And I'm sure some people will. But, like, the part of me was like, how many people are going to be interested in what I even think about this? You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Well, I mean, I think of it more in terms of bands like this. Of course that makes sense, first of all. They're Kerrangbin's top Spotify song has over 7 million streams. So they're not, you know, people have heard this band.
Yeah, go look at Kendrick Lamar's top song.
No, like, of course, but first of all, there's only 5 people. There's nobody who falls into the Kendrick Lamar category. There's right. 5 bands that fall into that general size category. And I think of when it comes to discussing a band like this generally, or someone like Napalm generally, it's more me saying, hey, those of you who are already listening to us, check this out. Maybe you'll like it.
No, look, I get you're trying to make recommendations. I'm just saying maybe we shouldn't try to make recommendations, or maybe we should – I don't know. I just feel like – I saw a stat, and I'm repeating this now third hand, so I don't know that I can't totally vouch for the veracity of it, but it makes sense to me, that 99% of all – you know, streaming, listening occurs on the top 10% of records.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And I would guess the cutoff for top 10% is higher than, you know, 10 million streams. That would be my guess.
Do you mean you think the cutoff is near 10 million?
No.
I would say it's probably more like 30.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, it's higher. Like, a lot higher than 10. Like, right, 10 right. million streams, you are definitely not falling in the top 10%.
Yeah, for sure not. So, no, of course. But again... like, it doesn't mean it's right, and it doesn't mean I don't want to mention it.
Right. Here's what I would say. It's like, if we're going to talk about something that's outside of that 10%, then it ought to be something like we, like, flat-out love. And maybe you do flat-out love this.
I have strong positive feelings about all 3 of these artists, certainly, but that's... we would not be discussing these 3 albums in any other week, I think, is gotcha. The bigger
part. All right. Yeah, do you like, so, I mean, I'll just ask you, like, do you flat out love Kruangbin?
I actually missed this band until very recently, so I'm pretty fired up about them at the moment. I think they're not going to necessarily blow your mind. Do I love them as like a chill beach listen? Did I have a couple of their albums on an awful lot in Hawaii? Yes.
Yeah. So that's that. All right. That makes some sense to me because as I listen to this, I'm not here to bury Kerrangbin by any means. Like it was an enjoyable listen. But it definitely it felt like music to listen to while you're doing something else.
It is. I would agree. Like, no.
When it has your full attention, it leaves you a little wanting.
If you're the kind of person who listens to music while you read, Kerrangbin's great. Yeah. If you're the kind of person who likes to listen to chill tunes while you play video games, Kerrangbin.
Yeah. You know, I could see making dinner and putting this on, or, you know, you have someone over the house and you kind of need some background noise. Like, it's great for that. As a foreground thing, I had some trouble with it. You know what I mean?
Perhaps. But if it's background noise, it's better than what that phrase seems to indicate.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not here to bury Kerrangbin because like I said, I did enjoy it. Like, there's some very cool grooves. You know what I mean? It just doesn't do much.
Grooves.
Yeah.
No, it's cool grooves. There's some good guitar playing. It's a particular sound and tone. That is somewhere between like psychedelic rock and R&B, and it's very enjoyable, I would say.
Yeah. Now the other 2 records, I would almost describe in the same way, even though they're very different. And that is some really excellent ideas, some moments where it all comes together, and I think, wow, this is really brilliant. Punctuated by. Some moments that just completely lose me and I don't care about at all. And oftentimes within the same song, those things will occur.
Ty Siegel is, that is the description of his career in many ways, I think. He is absurdly prolific and clearly wildly talented in a certain way in terms of, I don't even quite know how to describe it, but I'm kind of with you in as far as rarely does he get through an album for me, but sometimes not even a song without something that's like, that doesn't seem entirely necessary or like consistent.
Yeah. And I almost feel like when you put it that way, I mean, I had a sense that he was prolific because I, you know, trying to figure out which record I'm going to listen to, you know, or right. supposed to be listening to when there are a lot of them. I'm not going to get into how miserable it is to listen to a record on YouTube. But just note that it is miserable. Well, I don't know what you kids are doing out there that do this. There's like an ad every other song. But I feel like it's maybe like almost like a Ryan Adams thing where it's like, dude, maybe you're a little bit too prolific. And, you know, if you edited some of these ideas down, you know, that you could make it like some truly great albums, you know?
So, yeah, just to give you an idea, on his, his Wikipedia discography page, the overall description is, Ty Siegel has released 9 studio albums, 1 live album, 3 compilation albums, 3 extended plays, 19 singles, 16 music videos, and has also recorded as a member of various other bands. Like, the guy is right now 30 years old, and his first music was put out around 2008. So in 10 years, you know, it's insane to put out that much music. And certainly, the least critical thing you could say is there has been some unevenness to that quantity of production. At the same time, like, for me, there are times, and on this album, I think there are quite a lot of them, where like a song or a particular groove locks in, and you're like, this guy is awesome.
Yeah, 100%. I'm right there with you.
All right. I actually feel like that's gone better than expected. I do think we've saved the toughest sell for last because the band Hiatus Coyote, were you aware of them?
No, I didn't listen to Hiatus Coyote.
I know. Okay. Napalm is the lead singer.
Gotcha. Okay.
Of the band,
I was like, crap, I thought there was
Coyote.
Some homework I wasn't going to do. By the way, I definitely thought about coming in here and trying to pretend like I didn't do the homework, but I didn't think I could sell you on that at all.
That would have been funny. except, like, it would have derailed the podcast before the podcast started,
yeah.
is the problem.
Yeah.
Anyway, Napalm, real name Naomi something or other, is the lead singer and guitarist of sort of, what do they call it here? Wikipedia calls them a future soul quartet from Australia. I would have gone like psychedelic R&B, which is not so different from future soul, but I perhaps overused the term psychedelic in regards to music. She, on her solo album, is almost entirely acoustic, just her and a guitar, but does a lot of the same polyrhythmic sort of out there, the future part of the future soul, if you will, just without a lot of the sort of more psychedelic and electric elements that come with Hiatus Coyote. So it's a particularly interesting effect. And I'm imagining that's probably the stuff you responded less to.
I would actually say it's a particularly uninteresting effect, which is not to say that, like I said, there weren't parts that I enjoyed and I thought some of these songs had really good ideas. I would not have guessed that she was Australian. So that's kind of neat.
She is a very interesting looking woman as well and has a commanding stage presence.
I mean, I can hear some of the talent that comes through on some of these songs at times. And, you know, sometimes the songs meander, but I feel like as, you know, in an album format, doing this sort of polyrhythmic solo acoustic thing on every song. And every song's roughly in the same tempo and the same key. Like, they're definitely different ideas. Like, I'm not saying it feels like the exact same song.
It's not monotonous, but it's specific.
Yeah, and in an album format, it's like it's too specific for 12 songs in a row, man. Like, it's hard to take that thing down in one sitting. It really is. I don't know if it's 12 songs or whatever it is, but man, it was. You know, it was the kind of thing where, like, four or five songs, I was like, okay. And then, but by, like, song eight, I was like, get me out of here. And I'm like, oh, wait, we're not done yet.
You were I mean, you know, okay. Like, so I guess I understand that as an album, this would probably benefit from, like, a single mixed in every 3 to 4 songs.
Yeah, it's not coming. Like, this record needs some drums. Like, I don't know, like, Hiatus Coyote...
I think
sounds
like
maybe it might be more interesting because it's not without talent and it's not without some good ideas, but like sometimes it's really just one idea repeated over and over again with some different rhythms around it. And it's, I don't know, I need more in a song than that.
I do think there is her biggest challenge certainly is making the strange rhythm decisions and, you know, sort of odd kilter to the whole thing work without any percussion.
Yeah, I would agree. And at times it didn't work to me. Times it does, like there were parts I'm like, okay, all right, I see what you're doing here. And then there were other parts where it was off the, it just felt like this is off the rails and not in a good way.
She undeniably has both a good voice and a unique voice. And also undeniably is a very talented guitar player. So
yeah, I don't disagree with either of those sentiments.
Right. So that's like you get that right off the bat, and then you know you kind of got to reckon with what she's actually giving you. I think.
Yeah.
Which I'm into. I did realize going in you were not into that.
Yeah.
Like, but I still wanted to see how you responded, and frankly, like I feel like my original intentions with this episode were completely validated throughout. You loved Jumanji. Okay, you liked it at least.
I liked Jumanji.
You like. Appreciated the visuals of Altered Carbon, which may have been as much as we could have possibly expected. And your general response to all three albums was like open-minded and at least partially positive. Like that's a win for me. Right,
like now. I wanted to give all these records a chance. I'm not listening to Napalm again. Like that's definitely the Kruang Bin. Like I said, I could see putting that on in some specific circumstances that might happen again.
Here's what I'm going to say. The next time Ty Siegel or Hiatus Coyote release an album, either if I think the album's really great or a couple of songs are really great, I'm going to make you listen to those things and see if we've come.
I would be willing to check in again on Ty Siegel. Or is it's Ty Siegel, not Ty Segal, I'm assuming. Right?
Yeah, it's Siegel.
Yeah, I'd be willing to check in on him again and see, you know, if he had more stuff. I would check that out.
And yeah, the one thing we can definitely say about him is he rocks, man.
Yeah, he does rock, unquestionably. And that's good. It's nice. It's nice to hear some people rocking in this day and age.
For sure. It's good to rock sometimes.
Have we talked about this thing? I'm going to get a little confessional here. I think we've talked about this, right? That I now get weirdly emotional in movies.
Oh, I mean, I think we've talked about both of us becoming weird, weepy old men.
Yeah. That's Jumanji. And it's Jumanji. And it's.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Like,
for sure.
And I don't like. Again, I'm not saying like this movie will make you cry. It just made me cry. I have cried at like some weird movies I wouldn't even recommend.
The sappiest stuff gets me now.
And I have now realized that like this is my weird thing that I like to go to the movies by myself in a matinee show, you know, where there are hardly any people. That is exactly how I want to see a movie and cry. That's what happens to me. Yeah. And that's the weird thing that I do in life. So I'm going to try to own that, I guess. But, man, I didn't know this was going to be my weird habit in life. You know what I mean?
I fully support you. I expect I will have some habits similar to that, though most of my teariness happens in my room. But I'll tell you this. Parks and Rec makes me cry once of every three episodes or so.
I feel like that's more like a, like you're genuinely feeling something emotional. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, maybe, but like it's still Parks and Rec.
Like
this is still great as it is. It's a network comedy.
Yes. Ooh. Speaking of. We should get into homework in a second. But I, I feel like for me, it's honestly like music cues are doing it to me as much as anything else.
Oh, 100%. Lady Bird, like every time a song from 2002 came on, I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why I'm so emotional. Clearly, I must be bottled up in some other way in life.
I have really, over the last 5 years, gotten to know an emotional state in life that I was previously rather unfamiliar with, which is like laughing through my tears.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Cause like, I just wasn't that close. Like those two things were pretty far away for me for most of my life. I think I had a large space in between tears and laughter out loud. But the tears have really closed the gap. So I can go very quickly if there's like a heartwarming but also funny moment to that thing that you often see in movies where someone is sad or heartbroken and then laughs like through the tears. Yeah. I've really gotten to know that.
It feels really like distant and almost out of body for me. Like
a little bit.
I don't really – sometimes I'm like, why is this happening? You know, like it's definitely happening and I'm feeling it, but I don't know why. It's very strange.
Uh-huh. It's like a physical thing.
Yeah.
It feels like an involuntary physical reaction.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
We're two grown men talking about crying in the movies on a podcast.
Hey, man. That's what happens. That just proves that we are grown.
Yeah.
You know?
That's right. That's right. Not afraid to be vulnerable, ladies.
That's what I'm going
to
keep telling people. Anyway.
All right. So let's talk about homework this week. You mentioned network sitcoms. I threw out something. I was really, honestly, genuinely surprised at your reaction when I threw this out pre-show.
Yeah, because I watch The Mick and all that, and I love Always Sunny, and I'm a Patton Oswalt fan, sure.
Yeah, so, you know, I suggested AP Bio starring Patton Oswalt, and It's Always Sunny's Glenn Howerton, and you were like, do we have to? And I was like,
isn't this just bad teacher? I mean, like, what?
Well, I don't know. It may just be bad teacher. I haven't watched it. I thought we should watch it and figure it out.
I'm turned off by the premise, but I'll watch it. If you're saying we should watch it, I'll watch it.
You know what? We watched that Patton Oswalt, Christopher Maloney thing.
Yeah,
that monstrosity
great.
That I hated. So we might as well watch this.
But at least that was creative, I thought. You know, it was probably creative in a way I should have realized would make you furious, but it was at least creative. This feels very like, you know, oh, Caitlin Olsen's got a show, and people seem to be watching it enough to keep that on. Let's give Glenn Howerton one where he plays his character from Always Sunny.
I don't know. Like, maybe I just have some hope for the network sitcom form, that it's still doable.
There are things that give you hope. It's not unreasonable to have hope. It's just, again, the conceit of this show does nothing for me.
Yeah. All right, well, I feel like it's at least worth checking in on.
Let's give it a try.
So well, you know, 30 minutes of your life.
Seriously, I can afford that.
Yeah.
We're also going to watch Black Panther and listen to the Black Panther soundtrack.
We're going to get very Black Panther up in here.
And why the hell not, man? The movie has been universally acclaimed so far, and the soundtrack, having listened to it once, although not very carefully, I can tell you it's got bangers.
Yeah. I have not listened to it yet. I do have tickets for Black Panther opening weekend, so that's
I got to figure out when I'm going to go. It's all of a sudden I'm working too much.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that's one where I don't think it's going to matter for me what time of day I see it. It's not going to be an empty theater for sure.
Yeah, I know. That's the problem. It's like I'm thinking I'll go to a matinee on Friday, but like whatever. I'm not going to bore you with my time constraints.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm worried I have to spend 45 minutes at a theater ahead of time or else go to one with assigned seats is the basic gist of it.
Yeah, I think assigned seat theater is where it's at for you, and I would try to figure out your time a couple days in advance if you could.
Yeah, that's the idea. We'll see what happens.
Man, you know, I mean, I really like that Alamo Drafthouse over there. I know it's not a cheap movie, but it's a good time, and they get some tasty drinks.
I go way too much, and every time I go, I drink a boozy milkshake, which is dangerous and bad for my health.
Yeah, agreed. I have had the boozy milkshake, and I can confirm that.
Oh my God, they got one. I'll recommend the two boozy milkshakes at Alamo that you should have. One is a sort of a chocolate whiskey, a chocolate and bourbon type deal. The other is a tequila and cinnamon ice cream situation, and you just simply can't go wrong with either of them.
Yeah, I just want to recommend boozy milkshakes as a thing in life. There should
absolutely
just be more of
more
those.
Boozy milkshakes.
There should just be more of those.
One time at Rudy's Can't Fail Diner in Emeryville, I had a boozy milkshake. Theirs is a chocolate espresso Guinness shake that is truly phenomenal. And funny thing that hadn't occurred to me, like, we were finishing our meal and I got half a damn milkshake left. And I'm like, oh, can we throw this milkshake in a to-go cup? And they're like, no, moron, you can't take your Guinness in a to-go cup from our restaurant. And I was like, oh, yeah, it does have alcohol.
Sure,
right, yeah.
If we were
and
in New Orleans. Milkshake. Shout out to Mike Dirt, owner of Rudy's.
Yeah,
cafe,
respect
cafe.
Green Day.
Yeah. All right, anything else that we need to do homework-wise, or are we just going to kind of think of some stuff as the week goes?
That feels like a short slate. I do
it does
think
feel like
there
a short slate.
Is some – oh, yeah, of course. Yes, there's something critically important. It happens tomorrow. Have you heard?
Bachelor Winter Games?
Get the Did you watch Chloe Kim though?
Did I watch Chloe? No, I did not. I haven't watched any of the actual Winter Games. No.
Get on your computers, everyone, and watch Chloe Kim. You want to see what an awesome 17-year-old athlete looks like? She is doing stuff that like men snowboarders couldn't do 10 years ago or something like that. She is out of this world. Her second run, which was a victory lap, was like one of the best snowboarding runs you can possibly have. She flies through the air, and she's this tiny thing. It's awesome to watch.
This is like 100% the least interested in an Olympics I've ever been in my life.
I don't really care about the Olympics generally either. I'm just telling you this thing is worth watching, and yeah. It takes 2 minutes of your time on like NBCOlympics.com or whatever.
Yeah, all right.
It's worth it. I'm telling you. She's awesome. She's a killer. She's 17. She has a chance to win like 5 Olympics worth of gold medals. She's like a trans. It's like watching Tiger, only the little small female snowboarding version.
I mean, is it not like watching Shaun White? Like, I mean, that's the same story pretty much, isn't it? Right?
Yeah, it's not okay. Unlike Shaun White. But seeing
I mean, he was 17 when he started doing all this stuff, right? And
yeah.
Plus, he was doing it in two sports.
I'm not dissing Shaun White, man. I'm just saying, like, this is a rare athlete.
I'm really happy that Shaun White's finally found a decent haircut, though.
He got in an unfortunate place where, like, bad long hair was kind of his trademark.
Yeah. Yeah, it's rough.
You don't want that.
That's rough.
You want to avoid that if at all possible. That is not the thing, though.
What's the thing?
There's a huge thing dropping tomorrow. A huge thing. A thing that we haven't seen in 10 years.
Okay.
Nothing, huh?
Should I know this thing?
You should.
It's dropping tomorrow?
Tomorrow. On the net of the flicks.
And it's been 10 years?
It's been a decade. It won't seem like it's been that long, but it has.
I don't know. What is it?
It is a Chris Rock stand-up special.
Oh. Yeah, I wasn't going to come up with that. But I'm down to watch it.
Why aren't you more excited?
I mean, I'm excited. Chris Rock's awesome. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like 10 years in the making, I thought it was going to be, I don't know, it was going to be the comeback of, like, I thought it was like new episodes of Seinfeld or something.
I feel like you were more excited about Dave Chappelle, and I don't know if that's appropriate.
No, I'm just as excited. Like if a Chris Rock thing just popped up on my Netflix, I was like, oh, Chris Rock, I'd be into it. I don't know. You threw me off a little. That's all.
Well, I apologize. It's going to take me a week to recover from your tepid reaction to Chris Rock, though.
I'm into it. I'm down to watch it. I'm excited.
Okay, there it is. Chris Rock stand up special.
He's
Valentine's
good. He's funny.
Day.
He's
Boom.
Good at stand up. You know what I mean?
And by
like,
the way,
yeah.
I believe like. This stand-up is a lot of jokes about divorce, and perhaps that's why it hilariously drops on Valentine's Day. Just a thought.
Oh, all right. I'm into that. I feel like there are some new things coming up on the HBO and the Showtime and stuff. But
well, there is this Steven Soderbergh series, Mosaic, which sounds very weird. I'm not sure I'm particularly interested in watching it.
Yeah, let's hold off on that. So should we just hold a slate for the, you know, maybe midweek? We may drop some more homework on the Twitters or something like that.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. It feels like we always do. We do have the return of iZombie, one of my favorites, in a couple weeks, but I don't think we even talk about that. So I think we've got some time before the TV kicks back into full gear.
Well, yeah, I think March, you know, FX drops Atlanta and
that's right.
And the Americans final season, which I know that we probably won't talk about because
nobody cares. I submit to you, more people have listened to Kruang Bin than watched the Americans.
Ooh, I'm gonna say you're wrong on that. I'm gonna say you're wrong on that. I mean, you know, the Americans is drawing a, you know, I bet it's close to 1 million per episode.
Okay, but how many of those are distinct?
Right. Well, I'm not saying they're all distinct.
Same million.
But, I mean, it's been 10 years, so I'm sure that there's enough people, enough churn from that, that you're going to get to 7 million. At least.
I think it's close, dude.
All right. I mean, it's not like, this is one of the most critically acclaimed shows on television, so there are.
I know.
You know, there is an audience for it.
I didn't say it was bad. I said nobody cared.
Well, clearly some critics care. And I care, damn it. I care.
And I want you to care, and I want you to go on caring. I just want you to do it on your own time.
I'm damn sure gonna.
Big Black Panther week next week. That's the main point.
Yeah, indeed.
Okay.
All right, say bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.